This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
The National LGBTI Health Alliance held its 8th conference, Health Indifference 2013, Our Bodies, Our Minds, in Melbourne in April 2013. Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, is proud to partner with the Alliance to bring you this recording of the 2013 conference.
Hello and welcome to the Ageing and Aged Care stream. Everybody standing up, please. For those of you who do a program, for those of you who work with, advocate for, or do anything in your work, volunteer world, for somebody over the age of 65, you may sit down. Now, I'm going to chase some of those people because I think some people may be telling a fib. For those of you who are still standing, I have a challenge for you over the next 3 years. When we do this question at the next Health Indifference Conference, I want everybody to be able to sit down. Yeah? You can now sit down. All right. But I think that's a really important point to make sure that we're all trying to work for older LGBTI Australians. Okay. Cathy Noble, a trans woman since 2001, introduced Changing Aspects in 2002 for use as an activist and advocate. From 2004 until 2006, Cathy took on the United Kingdom government concerning amending UK documents. Over the time, she's worked with the Anti-Discrimination Human Rights Commission here in Australia, in New Zealand and in the UK, having contacts in Canberra in most departments as well as the Queensland government. And can I personally assure you, as somebody who talks to those departments, they know Cathy. Cathy's a member of WPATH and has just stood down from the Queensland LGBTI Legal Service. Do you have any time for your personal life, Cathy?
About that much.
Okay. And she's just published a book in 2011 called Two Lives, A Transsexual Story and Our Fight for Recognition. Cathy is 78 at the end of December 2012, and please welcome her.
Good afternoon, all. I'd like to acknowledge the people of this country. It's very interesting for me to actually be here to talk to you about these things. Yes, I've done a lot of work, and as Corey said, do I get any spare time? My three daughters are always on my back saying, for God's sake, give it away. But I can't, and they know damn well I can't. This is very dear to me because on top of working with the younger people in the trans community, I work with the elderly as well. And because of that, I'm not just with the elderly people in the LGBTI community, I'm talking about outside the cisgendered as well. In actual fact, five of us put together this little booklet to give some idea about going into care or retirement villages and how we should be looked after. I'll talk about this later and we'll go through it. One of the main things that I've found ever since, from the beginning, from 2002, is one word, fear. Even the word conjures up dire possibilities that may face us, but may not be real in any way. Fear promotes self-preservation in as much as we're armed with adrenaline in order to outrun any danger that presents. It's not always the case. As for many, fear immobilises and they freeze. And I've seen it with trans women. They're quite happy until they get to a certain spot in a shopping centre and they just stand there and they can't move. It's frightening. This situation is all too real for mankind as we face many disasters out of our control. These are bad enough when they occur infrequently, but more so when they occur on a daily or even hourly basis. This leads to immense pressure on the mental well-being of the recipient, mainly being us. It takes a lot of guts and confidence for trans people to start the whole process of transitioning. This whole period is fragile, and this means it can be destroyed. Excuse me, I've got a dribble. Can be destroyed by a thoughtless word or deed by someone who in authority, but in reality, knows nothing about our condition. Sorry, it happens all too often. This leads to a loss of confidence that is sorely needed. It takes much time and effort to recover lost confidence that is all too often caused by that one word, fear. For trans people, fear starts at a very early age, when they first realise that they have feelings of being wrong. By this I mean, they realise that there is something not right with them. But at such an early age, they don't understand what it is. This only gets worse over time until the inevitable happens and they finally realise they're in the wrong body. From here until what we call congruency takes place, that's when mind and body come into congruency. They live in fear of rejection, being outed, picked. That is to just everyday living, and perhaps, I say just perhaps, you begin to understand the pressures that we endure in order to just live. Some of the points, the fear of not being assessed as trans, or the assessment taking too long. Again, the fear of being outed and picked, which happens all too often. The fear of losing family, home, job, friends, again, all too often. Fear is with you even in what we call stealth, because some of them suddenly fear that hand resting on their shoulder. They've been in stealth for years and suddenly it's blown. I'm considering those people who are part of the trans community and the many fears that they encounter in just going about their everyday lives. How will you be viewed if living as female with male genitalia? This leads to the fear of being hospitalised. Fear of going into care or retirement establishments. The very great fear of being incarcerated. The fear of sex affirmation surgery, not going to plan. The fear of old age. The ultimate fear of dying. And the one thing that we do worry about is, will you be buried or cremated in your preferred sex if surgery has not been performed and their documentation has not been amended? Hospitalisation. I've been asked by trans people if I know of a friendly tranny surgeon, as they have to have an operation. My answer is, there ain't no such thing. When they're told this, many say they would sooner die than go into hospital. The other thing I tell them is, once they've said that, when you walk through the door into the hospital, have a look, and above the pegs on the wall, there's one that's high up, and it says, park your embarrassment here. And that's what you've got to do. I'll give you an example, my own example of this. 26th of October 2003. I was admitted to hospital with cardiac problems. I was first admitted to my local hospital, and they were absolutely fantastic. I found that my ID at the hospital did not match because I changed my name and sex. They changed all of the records and then passed me on to Greenslopes as a private patient. No problems here because I hadn't registered in that hospital before. So on arrival at Greenslopes, I was met by Barbara, a young lady who hails from Cape Town, as well as my daughter, Debbie, whom I'd phoned. Another lady from the office had to take more details on my admission, as this was my first time at Greenslopes. After this, on the way to the coronary care unit, with Tom pushing the bed, he asked, "Are you all right, sweetie?" I was amazed. Two doctors visited me to talk about my previous records and where my last two angioplasties had been done. I told them that both were done at Prince Charles, but when they asked for my records to be forwarded, confusion reigned. My records were still in my male name, naturally. So a form was put together for me to sign authorising their transfer. Unfortunately, the name to be signed was male. This was no longer legal. I told them I could not sign, so a compromise was made, a new form with F.E. Noble, now known as K.A. Noble. I could sign. That was fine. The records were duly transferred. This then led to the lady doctor saying she had no idea and complimented me on being a woman. An interesting aside was that the surgeon, whilst in the United States, worked with another surgeon who was in the last stages of transition. He was very interested when I spoke about Sheila Kirk and the fact that that was Dr. Kirk's new identity as a male to female transsexual. Also, the young nurse who had shaved me down below came and said to me, "Oh, you are rotten. Everyone knew you were transsexual except me. I shaved you down below before surgery. All I can say is, you're no bloody different to me down below." What to fear? There wasn't any. I found no problem with amending my hospital documents. Some find the process of amending documentation daunting, and that word again, fearful, as there are so many to amend, which means outing yourself on every single occasion. Government departments at all levels, as well as non-government organisations, then would you believe there are those that you can only amend before surgery, those after surgery, and those before and after surgery. Cachula wrote in 2002 in the Phallus Palace, "The personal accounts of transsexual people and their clinicians further demonstrate that surgical considerations often represent quite literally a matter of life or death." I've recently been asked by a very dear friend that I'm helping at the moment if there is any special consideration for trans women returning to work after surgery. As far as I'm aware, the following happens. There is nothing special about before or after surgery. You're female and therefore should be treated as any other female on the staff. She asked a further question about dilating with regard to work. And I said, no. You work it into your own personal system at home. You have one dilation early in the morning before you go. You have one when you come home and one before you go to bed if you've got to have three a day. Sounds daunting? It is. Care and retirement establishments, old age. Most are not aware of the needs of trans people. And because of this, again, we're put into a situation of fear. The staff are not knowledgeable concerning the fact that we might present as female, but retain male genitalia. This is because we choose to. We cannot afford to have operation, or we are unable to have it because it would be life-threatening. How will they respond if asked to bathe this person? The answers I got floored me. One said they accept people by their presentation, and the other one, "We think we've seen the lot." This was from a care facility and Respite Australia. There's still an awful lot to do in this area to educate staff, but not just staff, residents as well. We have to take into account how residents will react as word is likely to come out, and then privacy goes out the window. This is why we put this together. This is done by our local Redlands Care of the Aged. So they're CIS people, apart from me. Five of us put this together, and it's been well received. We sent it down to Canberra to the health department, was told it's an excellent resource. It contains things that we never even thought about. One of the things we wrote in there was, though the fear remains, the problem in the main stems from other residents and their lack of knowledge. To overcome this, a program of education for staff and residents concerning this issue must be formulated. All those involved with the trans person need to be aware of the problems between residents and how to recognise them, particularly when they might be confronted with what appears to be an innocuous argument. Reasons need to be sought as to why it happened and if something derogatory was said to the aggrieved person. It could be as simple as, "You're not a woman, you're a man." Now, whether or not this is meant to be discriminatory, the damage has been done. All I can say is we're all human beings with the same rights as everybody else to live. The fear of dying. We all approach death in our own way. I was clinically dead for a short time after my heart attacks in 1988. Since then, I no longer have fear of death. To me, it's part of life, the end part. Many fear that they have not been able to amend their documentation or have surgery, that they will be buried or cremated, not in their true sex. My understanding is what is placed on the death certificate that counts. One big area of concern that has reared its ugly head is how family look on this time. Most hopefully will accept our new sex. But there are always those who want the previous sex and name on the death certificate and headstone. We have seen this. Police and incarceration. Again, the need for training in how to cope and understand trans people is of the highest necessity. As these people are in the front line that many of us in the trans community come into contact with. When it comes to prison, then there are many problems that cause a sense of fear. Fear of being incarcerated in a male prison when presenting as female, with all that conjures up in your mind. Will you be allowed to use cross-sex hormones? If non-surgery, how is it determined which prison you will go to? The fear of abuse, physical, mental, and rape. What exactly are our rights in these instances? Universities, medical staff. I am not aware of any core curriculum concerning trans people in any university. There is a need to understand the whole spectrum of health, welfare, care, and support, as well as psychiatry, psychology, and of course, surgery. This is not just in the medical and nursing, but in all support staff. Sorry to say that this is much the same, as many are not aware or do not wish to become involved. The people we are expected to deal with are again passed on by word of mouth. If you find ones who care and know what they are talking about, there are now special areas of concern that are becoming more prevalent for both the medical fraternity as well as trans people. It's imperative that those who are expected to use in our transition, we use in transition, are up to speed on transsexualism. We have one GP north of Townsville. If a trans girl goes in there for a consultation and says that she's trans, he just tells her to sit there while he goes next door and gets the local priest to come and exorcise her. Bloody beautiful. This again causes fear in the fact that we are obliged to be assessed in order to have surgery, and without those assessments we can't. Mental health, suicide, depression, emergency support are all important areas of concern, and many are sadly lacking. Numbers are becoming more urgent to understand as more trans people are coming out. Governments need to be aware of the numbers of trans people out there. This is in order to be able to cope with future trans health problems. All of this because of the lack of support, empathy, and understanding of our condition can and does lead to fears of not just rejection, but total lack of response to our very real needs. Lastly, legislation. This is one of our biggest concerns, as we are subject to pressures that the cisgender world will never experience. This will be covered in another paper that I will be giving on Saturday afternoon. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for it. What a powerful story, and what a great place to start this panel on. Cathy, I have to say personally, having spoken to a number of people in Canberra that you speak to, you are one of Australia's most passionate trans advocates in the ageing and aged care space, and thank you for all the work that you do.
Thank you. If anyone wants a copy of this, there's a few copies here on the desk, so please come and help yourself. Sorry, my helpers could only put together 30, and they're a bit ageing. They're older than me, some of them.
And maybe, Cathy, what we might try and do is get a copy of it in PDF form, and we can put it on the conference website.
Well, the other thing is, on my website, they can go in there and they can print stuff off as well if they wish.
We'll get you a link as part of this session. Okay, Jude.
Thanks, Corey. First, thank you to the panel, and it's great that we see ageing has been given so much profile in this conference. A statement which I'd like some comment from the panel, if possible. We've put a lot of effort into getting aged care providers to lift their game in terms of what is going to be a minimum requirement and getting them on board, getting them above the line, and I really like that diagram, Catherine. My statement is that the majority of us will spend very little time in an aged care institution. I think it's a bit of a myth that everybody thinks you turn a certain age and you get shunted off to an aged care facility. Most of us will age in the community. My challenge is, I actually think the LGBTI community is incredibly ageist. What do we do as a community to challenge that and to see more visibility of older people within our own community and our own community events? I think we've put a lot of effort into getting the other side, if you like, to lift their game. What are we doing and what could we do to raise the bar on that? Thank you.
Well, as a 30-year-old, I'm going to say working on ageing and aged care is hoping to bridge the divide. But then I'm going to go down to Cathy.
Yeah, having faced this is a very big question, I think, for many of us. Especially trans women and trans men, but trans women definitely. I don't think a lot of people understand that we still have to do things like taking hormones for the rest of our life. So there should be training for that. Also, the point is that a lot of trans women feel that they have to continue dilating for the rest of their life. So this is something that people have to come to understand and learn about. I find a lot of people, when they come in contact with trans people, first of all, in any phase of the walk through the world, is that, oh, you know, what are you?
I've been asked the question, when did you stop being a man? And I said, I never have been. I'm a woman who suffered from a long bout of transsexualism. And basically, I think that, you know, if you can get that across to people and their understanding of it, it will make a big difference. But especially when you go into a trans, or sorry, not into a trans, but into any care facility whatsoever. There is a big push at the moment to keep the elderly in the home. And to this end, there are a lot of benefits that can be done. But unfortunately, eventually you have to move out, as I'm finding with the elderly where I live.
Thank you.
I agree with what Steve said 150%. It is a fantastic thing that is happening at the moment. And we just hope that it will continue. So I hope that we can allay your fears and you will sleep tight.
Catherine?
I've got a four-point plan, Jude. The first one is this. The profiling of ageing here, I think, is a step, a really important step. The second one is narratives from older LGBTI people, because I think the GLBTI community wants to hear and learn from old LGBTI people. And two of the other things that we're looking at doing in Victoria is the community visitors scheme, where we will look at if we are successful. It's Leanne from Switchboard. Sorry, Leanne.
It's the royal way. It's okay.
What we talked about doing in that round table was most probably having younger folk from the LGBTI community. And it will be an intergenerational project. So we'll have younger, middle-aged, mature people visiting older, socially isolated LGBTI people at home. And the fourth point that I've got is that one of the things that we want to do with Val's Cafe is have more events in the GLBTI community. So we have a regular event at Melbourne Queer Film Festival, which is so much fun. And the other thing is to, with Midsummer, you know, I think that's the next turf for us, is to start having events so that the LGBTI community get to see and think about LGBTI ageing all the time, and it's that it's a wonderful thing.
Steve, do you have anything you want to add?
I really think that question was probably directed at everybody else but me.
Okay. I'd add two small things. One is I would like to see our gay and lesbian radios, TVs and press have more LGBTI seniors. And part of the challenge for seeing that visual representation is there's not a lot of stock images out there. And we actually, as a community, need to go and develop them so that we can show visible images. And I was very pleased. Annika from Matrix was telling me she's got a whole bunch of them if you need some lesbian older women, because, what is it? Is it 2-1 over 70 and 4-1 over 90 are women? And yet when we look at where we do see LGBTI people represented, it's men. So it's not just about the age, it's also about who's actually going to be within that age of our community of what we're trying to represent. Okay, I have a short announcement, two things. One, if you haven't read it, please read the April National LGBTI Health Alliance newsletter, Health Update. It's all about ageing and aged care, and there's a wonderfully moving speech from Noel Tovey who couldn't attend today. This is my last function as the convener of the Ageing and Aged Care Working Group, and I just want to do a very big public thank you to Warren Talbot, Warren Summers, Garvey Anasari, and Sue J. Kentland in the National LGBTI Health Alliance's office for their wonderful secretariat support for me while I've been in convener. You guys rock, and can't wait to keep working with you in a new way. Thanks very much, everybody.
You have been listening to a recording from the Health Indifference 2013 conference held in Melbourne in April 2013. For more information about the National LGBTI Health Alliance, head to lgbtihealth.org.au. And for more information on Joy 94.9, Australia's only radio station for our diverse communities, explore joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.